pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with me, your show host, as always, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. It is a monsoon over here in Baldwin County. If you're out and about, make sure that you make sure you're safe. Not out on the roads. And if you got to be careful. Taking the kids to school today. It was some perilous times. I say school, summer camp, and daycare, if that constitutes school. But anyway, keeping an eye on that weather as it moves through. Coming up on the program today, Bradley Jay from Breitbart News making an appearance. We'll also hear from in the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour, April Marie Fogle, because as we the motto here is you never get enough April Marie Fogle on FM Talk 106.5. And then I am going to be out tomorrow. You'll get Scott Buttram. I believe he's got at least two guests already lined up with John Wall and Todd Stacey. But since I'm out tomorrow, Sir Elliot will be with us today. And that's in the 11 o'clock hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. I was actually listening to the Rob Hulbert segment about historic horse racing. And I can't get past this. Since they're doing historic horse racing, we need to legalize gambling in Alabama. Well, I mean, I'm going to just throw this out there, guys. How about we outlaw historic horse racing? Close the loophole. Yeah, you can work toward legalized gambling and doing whatever the state thinks is the right way of going about it. But in the meantime, close these loopholes. Don't let them have it both ways. The only legislative action, because changing the Alabama Constitution is a high bar. But it's a lot easier to outlaw this game of skill, as it has the legal definition. It didn't start here. I believe it started in, they were looking for ways in the Midwest to get around the same sort of gambling prohibitions that we have here in Alabama, and they invented historic horse racing. And what they do, these slot machines, they can be programmed all kinds of different ways to meet the criteria of making it a game of skill, just as we have electronic bingo. Well, I know it's a whack-a-mole game, but these are not good actors. Here's the deal. And just this whole gambling thing, it's fine. You know, I know we're, a lot of you are just legalizing and taxing and we're going to be rich, but that's not really how that works. But these people that we're supposedly supposed to, we're supposed to be working toward a solution on gambling. We're going to get the dog track guys at the table. We're going to get the Porch Creek at the table. We're going to do all of this. We're going to get them at the table. And we're going to have a discussion. We're going to hammer out a solution. But in the meantime, we're trying to hammer out a solution with these parties who are trying to circumvent the law all the time. That they're not acting in good faith. Why should we think that they are going to negotiate with you, the taxpayer, in good faith? That they're always trying to just cheat the system or figure a workaround. That they're not on their best behavior. They're not showing that they're good model citizens. But heck, let's just legalize gambling and give them everything they want. It's like, well, you got these shoplifters and they figured out a way to, you know, come in and steal something and you know, we should just give it away. Or there's this big company and it wants to expand and it's just polluting just a little bit within the legal limit. I mean, we want to let them, we should just let them expand and make it legal. They're breaking the letter of the law, but they're certainly, I believe it was said, the spirit of the law, the letter of the law. This certainly is not within the spirit of the law. But that's what you do. You just outlaw historic horse racing. You can't do that no more. But like I said, this is not just true of the Porch Creek at Mobile and wherever else. This is true at these dog tracks. They do it in Greene County. They do it in Victory Land in Macon County. They're doing historic horse racing. And it's a workaround. I don't know that that's necessarily the AG's opinion on this. But that's their workaround. And a lot of the local jurisdictions don't want to fight it. Or if you're in the case of Greene County and Macon County, you want to encourage it because that is revenue into your local coffers. But it's a misdemeanor. We talked about this dirty AG's race. It's too cost prohibitive to try to go one-on-one against these guys over this historic horse racing. That makes me miss old Bob Riley. Like, look, is this really gambling? Because it sure looks like it. But they could, you know, the legislature, we don't have gambling. It's in the Alabama Constitution. And if the legislature wanted to deem this to be gambling, then they could. We don't have to legalize it. We don't have to Nancy Pelosi it up here. We gotta pass gambling to know what gambling is. But like I said, we can get to a gambling solution in this state, and I think Tommy Tuberville is going to do that very early. I think it's coming. Nothing we can do to stop it. But I will say, there is a way to stop historic horse racing. Other than, let's just legalize gambling. This is the same thing they did in 2024 when they tried to legalize it. Well, you have so much illegal gambling going on in Alabama. We need to tax it and regulate it and make it legal. No, the people right now, as of right now, the law of the land is no gambling. And you need to enforce the law. Well, it's just a misdemeanor. It's not really worth our time. So rather than enforce misdemeanors, we're not going to spin our wheels on this. Or we're just going to have to live and let live. Is that really how this is supposed to work? Because you could raise the penalty from a misdemeanor to a felony if they wanted to. The Alabama legislature's capable of many things. I had to get that off my chest, though. Let's just go ahead and legalize it. Everything's going to be fine. And, I know, because the people who are, we're supposed to be working out an agreement, a comprehensive gambling deal with, are acting in bad faith by engaging in historic horse racing and trying to cheat the law. And then they're going to, and here's the thing, it's not like, okay, tomorrow we're going to legalize gambling and we're going to open it up and people could come in. Big casinos could come into Alabama. No, it's going to be like this picking winners and losers deal they're going to have where the license are going to go to, it's going to be like Alabama, sweet grown Alabama or something. And we're going to give gambling licenses, casino licenses, sports betting licenses to the gambler, the people who are cheating the law right now in Alabama. Look, do it on tribal land. Nothing you can say about that. That's the law. But that's not on tribal land over there at the Greyhound Park. This has been going on for a while, and there's a lot of discussion about historic horse racing. And there was even a push by Bobby Singleton to try to make historic horse racing like actually legal under the letter of the law, and it didn't go nowhere. Game of skill, not a game of chance, is the argument, and that's just not how this works. 251-343-0106. Still talking election stuff. In the polls, we did our analysis. You check it out, 1819 News, 1819news.com. And they were wrong, like way off. But there's been some garbage polling. And I guess from now, from this point forward, we're going to have to like caveat any polls, any campaign commission polls with, well, these guys got it. This firm got it wrong in 2026. But we have litigated that. I'll say this, Iran deal, it was the strangest thing. You've been kind of picking up on this in the last couple of weeks. As they got closer to the deal, you started seeing more Republicans come out, not necessarily very, very like aggressively like a, you know, MS Now or CNN talking head against the Trump administration. But a lot of the war hawks thinking that this is a surrender. I mean, maybe it's not the objective that the Trump administration walked into its conflict with Iran wanting. But, I mean, how do you say that? I mean, they took out the military, took out the, like, top 10 in the Iranian government, and say that this was a loss for the United States. Maybe if you categorize it like this, and then this, like, look at all the money we spent. We depleted our military assets. And what did we get for it? Not the total package. But the political pressure right now is like, if this did not impact gas prices, or if this was not something that was impacting Americans individually, they would probably be still pushing Iran, pressing them. But it's impacting us here at home. They had to come up with a solution. The midterm elections are coming up. You can't have $5, $6 gallon gas. It's just not going to, it would just make a political outcome a lot worse. Well, politics shouldn't figure into this, but it does. And I was talking to somebody about it, you know, the other day, like, yeah, did they game plan it? Did they plan on these high gas prices, high oil prices to translate into high gas prices? Well, they did, but did they take it that next step? What is this going to do to Americans' opinion about Republicans in a contested midterm? 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Let's get some text here. Paul, What are the odds the U.S. taxpayer paid most of that $300 billion? I'd say pretty good. I mean, yeah. I mean, who else is going to pay it? That's like a rounding error on a NDAA or something. Backstrap, you can hate gambling all you want, and you can talk for days and months about how much you hate it, but it's here, and it will expand. But don't worry, Goat Hill. We'll monkey F it, and just like they did with medical marijuana. They will. Gambling's coming to Alabama. I am not, like, delusional here. Y'all are going to get some kind of gambling in Alabama legalized. At this point, though, it's like, okay, so we're going to create this system in Alabama that will likely end in tears. And we're going to give the gambling operators who have been either trying to find loopholes in the law or have just been blatantly violating the law. Favorable treatment over anything else, anybody else. Because it's not going to be a free market. And in fact, we're going to negotiate with these bad actors or these actors who aren't, like I said, operating in good faith right now by implementing a historic horse racing program at their facilities. Unnamed texter. If you abolish historic horse racing, you'll be rebranded as Amish NASCAR. I mean, they'll do something, but like we don't. The point isn't, you know, how many ways can they find a loophole? It's like you need to tell these guys, if you want to be legitimate, if you want to operate in this state, you want your Alabama legislature to create a system for you to be profitable someday. Stop trying to cheat the system right now. Stop trying to be too cute by half all the time. Because if you're going to do this now, if you're going to look for every opportunity to get around the law, get around the state constitution, why should we trust you under a legal gambling regime? Why should we think that you are going to be a good faith operator? That you're going to pay your taxes like you're supposed to? That you're going to do what you're supposed to do? You're into the deal if you're always trying... Right now, and we see the behavior, it's right there in front of us. If you're always looking for a corner to cut. Tim, Jeff, why is the state worried about negotiating with dog tracks and Porch Creek Indians? They need just to tell them this is how it's going to be. It's either by way or the highway. You'll take what we give you, or you get Duffy's. I'm actually against gambling because you have too many people that are on government subsidies that spend all their money on gambling. Because... I mean, there's a local economic interest. Look, the dirty secret here is, and y'all know it, I've said it 100 times on this station, you have a majority in the legislature, probably 50% plus one, that would pass a gambling bill. You don't have the supermajority. The supermajority is what you need to get across the line to change the Alabama Constitution, to get it on the ballot so you could just have a vote on it. I'll forgive the people a vote on it. Well, give us a vote on raising our gas tax, too, while you're at it. Anyway, back to what I was saying. So the way the legislature works is there's not enough Republicans just to do it on their own. There are a number of lawmakers in Alabama who are never, ever, ever going to vote for any kind of gambling, any kind of gaming, none of it. Zero. Zilch. They're off the table. So when leadership wants to do gambling, they have to go across the aisle. They have to go talk to Democrats. And this is not necessarily true of PCI, but it's certainly true of the dog track casinos, that they want more. They want legitimacy. They want a protection racket where the state looks at it and makes them one of the favored licensees.
First thing I
and that's the way they have to do it to win their vote over to get to that three-fifths majority you need to change the Alabama Constitution. And that's why you can't just tell them to pound sand. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And no one can change my mind, but Mama tried. Get
to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, get in touch with the program. I know, like, all you pro gamblers are breathing down my neck this morning, but 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program, April Murray Fogle, because you never can have enough April Murray Fogle on FM Talk 106.5. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, a returning champion a day early, since I am taking the day off tomorrow. But State Senator Chris Elliott will make time for us, so stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, regular on this program, always appreciate his time, Bradley Jay, my colleague at Breitbart News. Bradley, how are you?
Jeff, doing well. Always fun to be the opening act for April Murray.
Well, I mean, you know, that undercard is pretty stacked, though, you know.
No, she's the best.
Let's start here with a peace deal, and I guess... It's fascinating to me to watch. You have like the you know, sort of left center media, CNN and MS Now and those types. Oh, this is a terrible deal. It's a surrender document and it's a surrender letter. It's Chris Van Hollen and, you know, his ilk talking about how just awful this is. And then, like, you got those guys who, you know, 3 months ago thought Donald Trump was the greatest president since George Washington. Talk because he took military action against Iran that are like kind of they don't have the courage to be like out there as hard in the paint as the left is, but they're coming in a very I just don't know about this. I'm very skeptical. You can't trust those Iranians. And then, you know, so what do you make of the politics and sort of the fallout here of this memorandum of understanding?
Well, Washington has a courage deficit. There's no question about that. I think the lens through which this has to be viewed, every single opinion or statement that anyone is making about this deal is all about the 2028 presidential race. That's all. The Republicans who are discussing it are framing it in a way that will either help or hurt Vance or Rubio. The Democrats, of course, would. Some of them are claiming that the deal is similar to the one that Obama signed, which isn't entirely true. Yet they praised that one and hated Trump's. And it's all presidential politics. It's very silly. The bottom line is that the details of what's actually in the deal don't really matter when it comes to what these political folks' opinion of it's going to be.
Well, if it's presidential politics, then they're trying to assign a connection with it and J.D. Vance, I assume. Is it a good deal? Is it going to make J.D. Vance, if he has to be assigned responsibility for it? I mean, is it one of these things that he could ride to the finish line potentially?
Potentially, but I don't know if it will be top of mind for voters in 2 years. More importantly, perhaps, is the short-term ramifications. If this ends up being a drag on Republicans in the midterms, that might be what people remember is the political consequences. If the deal holds, if the peace holds, if energy prices can get back where they were or even better in time for folks to have a few months to really feel and appreciate him before the midterms, then people might forget about the pain that they had to pay earlier for the deal, or at least overlook it enough to still cast the ballot for Republicans or get out and vote for Republicans. It's difficult to project that. I'll be honest and tell you that I very much don't understand the mind of these swing voters who vote Republican one day and Democrat the next. That just doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that there could be a clear distinction between the two parties' visions for America. Of course, there's a lot of nuance within each of those visions. But long term, unless something happens and the Middle East erupts into war. I don't know that this has the perils for Vance that a lot of the folks beating up on the deal would like for it to have.
Well, I'd say this, though, because I think this Iran conflict has, like, I mean, it's created a clear schism in Republican Party, probably more importantly, the Trump base. And, I'm not sure that it brings everybody together, but maybe it makes some of these people who, I've heard all the arguments that Trump never said that he was not going to strike Iran or whatever. But there was this perception that he was going to be a non-interventionist, that he wasn't going to engage in these foreign entanglements, and that this was the kind of presidency we were going to get. It wasn't going to be Bush. It wasn't going to be neoconservative. And do you get to a place where maybe you could bring that wing back into the fold?
I would think so. Look, people need to – I feel like there is a segment out there that just refuses to try to understand Trump for whatever reason. Firstly, look, you can't equate – look, 13 Americans dying – through the Afghan, or excuse me, this Iran war, that's a tragedy. That's a far cry from what we experienced under George W. Bush, and I mean even presidents after that. So the two things, like the president is not a warmonger. That's just the attempts to paint him as such are frankly pretty ridiculous. But look. Trump, the folks who, again, it's all presidential politics. A lot of the folks who did not want him to get involved in Iran are now denigrating this deal. It's just, it's all about presidential politics. You can't trust anything that anyone is saying on Fox News, because no one is, it seems like none of the talking heads or none of the elected officials are being forthright against this. I think that they would like to make this a little bit bigger of a dividing of a wedge in 2028 than I think it's going to be. But that's just how, especially inside Republican politics, between the folks who want Rubio and the ones who want Vance, they're just so desperate to do something that can divide the two and prop up their candidate that there just aren't that many honest assessments of this. But the bottom line, I mean, if the ceasefire holds, I think that Trump and Vance will be in fairly good situation.
What I don't understand, and I'm sure there's 100 different answers to this question, though, is if this isn't it, if this isn't the right piece and at the right time and with the right conditions or what is the objective here? This has never been clear throughout this whole ordeal what they want to do. All I hear is, we want to make sure that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. Where are we on that? Do we have a definitive? I can't imagine they are any closer today than they were when this all started. Do we think they will ever have a nuclear weapon? We've been hearing this for 30 years. But, like, okay, if now's not the right time, if now is not the right time to push the peace button or push the pause button or whatever you want to call it, the truce button, then what do these folks want beyond the a new government in Iran? Because I don't think that's going to happen.
So on the regime change and the nuclear capability issues, look, there's no question that our allies in Israel, they wanted regime change. I mean, they want to burn the country and all 80 million inhabitants down. Regime change was never a realistic goal, and it's not really one that President Trump had. If we can, I mean, of course, we killed the Ayatollah. Is the new regime that different? Maybe. But I mean, it's Iran. Like, what do we expect to have? Like a new Shah come in who is just tripping all over himself to promote American foreign policy inside Iran? That's not realistic, and that's not something that President Trump ever. That was not a prime objective. if it happened and it worked out, then it's a bonus. And there were some efforts made to kind of steer what that would look like, but not the prime objective. On the nuclear capability side of things, I have not yet seen anyone credibly make the argument that Iran is closer to developing a nuclear capability, or that they even have the same ability to work in that direction now than they did before we got involved in Iran this year. It's just that's just not true. I don't know how, when you talk about before this latest, you know, we call it the Iran war or conflict or whatever, before this broke out, the strikes that we did months prior, there's no question that harmed their capability to develop nuclear weapons. There's no question. Did it decimate it, set it back by decades, as some of the Trump administration claimed? Well, I don't know. Some of that's posturing, but there's no question that it was hurt. Then, when you couple that with what we did over the past 100 days or so in Iran, I mean, look, the country was decimated. No, we didn't destroy bridges or things like President Trump had teased that he would want to do. But we legitimately, I mean, they don't have a Navy anymore. So much of their infrastructure was taken out. So much of their military assets were destroyed. They can't just move money around and start spending all this money on developing a nuclear weapon now. They just don't have the resources. And that this is what's different in the Trump deal than the Iran deal. We're not just sending them pallets of cash and in return for a promise that they would play nice and not develop a nuclear weapon. That's what Obama did. It was obviously very foolish. There's very much a carrot and stick approach that the president appears to have taken here. There is sanctions relief. There is a freeing up of money from other countries that will go to Iran. There are, of course, you know, money's fungible. It can go to other things. But there are mechanisms through which those investments and lifting of sanctions can dry up if Iran does not hold to its part of the bargain. I mean, that's going to be difficult. We've seen with whether it's Iraq or North Korea, that sometimes those countries will keep you at arm's length and won't be honest with you. But for this to hold beyond Trump, it's going to take a president who is willing to play hardball the same way that Trump is. That is one question I have about the deal. If we do end up, and we will eventually have a Democrat president, whether it's President AOC and then in a couple of years from now or whoever it is in 6 years from now, there will eventually be a Democrat president or maybe even a Republican president who these foreign leaders in Iran, in this case, think that they'll be able to walk all over. And if that's the case, will the deal be effective? I don't know. I have a few questions about that.
Real quick, I'll wrap it up here. Any surprises from Tuesday night here in Alabama?
Not really. I mean, the bottom line is Barry had millions of dollars from Club for Growth and the crypto industry to spend to get folks ginned up to vote in a runoff with very low turnout. And I don't even think that Jared Hudson was on TV in the days and week or so leading up to the runoff. And you can't win. You can't win a race like that if you're not up on TV. The Trump endorsement was, I don't know what it did in turnout for Barry, but I do think it froze a lot of the donors and campaign funds that might have gone to Jared otherwise. But I mean, the margins, I mean, it was impressive for Barry. Now he's going to have the challenge of going to the United States Senate and diving into that work and learning the Senate and getting involved. And I certainly pray for him and hope that he's ready and willing to take on that challenge, because it is, I mean, the Senate and the House is it's apples and oranges.
Well, I'll say this about Jared Hudson. Yeah, I mean, he went on TV everywhere in the last couple of days, but I think his way of doing the campaign a campaign in Alabama is the way of the future. The state's not quite there yet where what his tactics were, where it's kind of viral things and, you know, an online presence where you really focus on the digital game and you do a lot more there. And not just the, like, checking the boxes like a lot of campaigns do. Well, look at me. I'm on my selfie phone here, you know. He kind of got that. But you're right. Like, ultimately, the tried and true playbook in Alabama, for at least for right now, is where it was. Because look where he came from. I mean, he unseated. I mean, he took out Jared Hudson, defeated a two-term incumbent, and Steve Marshall, a statewide incumbent. So there's something to be said about that. But it's just, you're right, though. The way we do campaigns, I think he kind of exposed that you can make up some ground. You can make up something and get something out of it without having the big money behind you or the special interest of or whatever.
That's true. That's definitely the way that things are going. But look, money is still the mother's milk of politics, and $13 million from Washington almost every single time is going to beat a million or whatever Jared Hudson raised. I don't even know if he raised that much. Times are changing, though. I don't expect we've seen the last of Jared Hudson.
Bradley, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
At Breitbart.com and on X or Twitter at Bradley AJ.
Bradley, appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on this morning.
Great to join you, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Watching the Knicks parade. All eyes on New York City and the New York Knicks. That seems to be a central focus of the news this morning. It tells you what you need to know about your media. And just how New York focused they can be, or DC focused, but a lot of times New York City focused. So you can imagine, like, at the Denver Nuggets or the Oklahoma City team Thunder won the NBA title, we'd be wall to wall with parades in Oklahoma City or Denver or wherever. Just tells you what, like I said, what you need to know. Unnamed texter, believe it or not, in 1997, I would skip school for a few periods my senior year in my school uniform and have a beer with a fabulous lunch. Place a couple of super trifecta bets as well. The good old days. Where did you go to high school? The Tropicana or something in Vegas? Toothless Bammer. Alabama had horse racing in the 80s. Epic failure. State of Alabama is always barking at the moon with the gambling industry. We have gambling 40 minutes away. Jeb Montgomery is going to be about this gambling all wrong. Is going about this gambling all wrong. Too late for starters. Instead of wasting time with the lottery, jump on board with what Huntsville is doing. Tech Mobile has to offer with Port, Rail, and Brookley. If people want gambling in Alabama, they're going to get it. The way they do it, they never talk about, you know, there's going to be societal impacts. There are people who are going to do the wrong thing here and gamble. And, well, they're going to gamble with but you're making it easier. And you're also putting the state seal of Alabama on it, giving it kind of an approval, a nod. And I think, you know, people don't want gambling in their state. Or they at least don't want the state of Alabama, like, with this perverse incentive to take the poorest among us who aren't paying taxes, who maybe aren't making, a high income. They're on a fixed income. And they're going to gamble, and then they're without. But how does society deal with that? Well, they're adults, they'll figure it out. But we don't do that. We don't do that in America. We don't leave people to suffer. We haven't had that conversation. We're just like, Well, they're trying to tell you those Bible thumpers, those hypocrites, the Baptist Church try to tell you what you can and can't do with your money. I just like find that to be such a weak argument. If you're going to put the state seal of Alabama, the state of Alabama is going to have some buy-in with what happens from the fallout. And guess what? We are the state of Alabama. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open.